Yes, people, it is time for another episode of Echo Chamber. And just a single installment this week, but we look at five different films. We hit the cinema a couple of times. Yeah, it's flavor, people, it's flavor. So let's get things popping. Sit back and let's go. Okay, so let's start things off with a little time travel. People, this is Omniloop. Okay, people, so I decided to check out Omniloop. This is the new film from Bernardo Brito, who wrote, directed. He also edits the film. It is produced by David Honjoza, Nelson Hernandez, Patrick Donovan, Benjamin Cohen. It's executive produced by Christine D'Souza Gelb, Pamela Kuffler, Kevin Rowe, and Christine Vacon. It is line produced by Sinead Cage, Caitlin Aurelia Smith took care of the music, Ava Benjamin Shaw was on cinematography, Martin Anderson edits alongside Brito. Casting was taken care of by Taylor Williams and Kate Geller. Katie Birmingham was production design. Gabriel Ducroix is art direction. Set decoration, we have Chantel Adams. James Neal is costume design. We've got Mary Chipman, Lauren Citera, Monet Howard, Geraldine Sanville, Raquel Salidvar, Kashley Shepherd, and Yvette Villanova, all taking care of hair, makeup, all of that jazz, right? And our cast. Well, Mary Louise Parker is Zoya Lowe. A younger version of Zoya is played by, the young version of Zoya is played by Riley Fincher Foster. The college age Zoya is played by Madison Bullock. Zoya is married to Donald, who is played by Carlos Jacot. A college-age Donald is played by Jacob Bond. So, Donald and Zoya have a daughter, Jane, who is played by Hannah Pearl Oop. She is married to Chris Whitstake. Well, no, she's married to Morris, who is played by Chris Whitstake, right? So his mother, Sandra, is played by Fern Katz. Zoya befriends Paula, played by A.O. Edebiri. We've got Adam, played by Stephen Meyer. There is a resident at her mum's care home who is played by Jennifer Bassey. We have got Professor Duisberg, played by Harris Yulin. There's Mark, played by Eddie Cahill. Louise, played by Efren Hernandez. The Nanoscopic Man, played by James Benson. Taxi Driver is played by Rick Moose. Dr. Letterman is played by James Healy Jr. the lawyer played by Roberto Escobar. I think that's the main lot of people, really. The hospital receptionist, played by Amanda Tavares. The nurse, played by Esther Tania. Yeah, they're the main people. The gist of the film is this. In Miami, the physicist Zoya Lowe is terminal with a black hole in her chest. She has only 1 week to live. 1 week life. Wait. She has only 1 week life. I mean, that sentence is horrible. 1 week left to live, right? And her husband, Donald, her daughter, Jane, and Jane's fiancé, Morris, bring her home to spend her last days comfortably with her family. However, when Zoya bleeds, indicating that she will die, she goes to the bathroom, swallows one mysterious pill that she found when she was 12, and returns 5 days back in her life. Now Zoya wants to research how she could return further and make other choices in life. When she meets the graduation student Paula, she teams up with her to analyze the pill for several 5 days. Oh, it's horribly. This is terrible. Oh, I think it's been translated. That's the problem, right? This is our director is Brazilian. And yeah, the synopsis was probably translated from Brazilian, which then makes, you know, it's not a perfect thing. But essentially, right, she's trying to find a cure and a way to extend her life. Right, so it was an interesting film, right? It's sci-fi, but it's very lo-fi, right? It is not big and brash or anything like that. It's this kind of, you know, we're trying to tell a more personal tale, right, on time travel. And I kind of like that, right? I like the, you know, big is fun. Like, I like the big space adventures and different time stories. But it's always nice to get, you know, something different, you know? It's, like, the crazy thing is, because, you know, she gets diagnosed with a black hole in her chest. Now, when they said that at the start of the film, I'm assuming they're talking about, you know, something else, right? Like, you know, people have holes in the heart, right? Like a pinhole or something like this. So that's what I'm assuming. But it's actually a black hole. But it's very nonchalant the way they talk about it. So it's kind of funny that we have this, you know, reality that seems pretty much like the one we're in. But they insert these different things, but play it like, this is just anything, right? Like the nanoscopic man. It's just like, well, yeah, this is just stuff, right? Rather than this is like mind-blowing. A black hole? What? You know, so it's, you know, we're kind of believing that all of this stuff is just regular for them. So it makes it slightly adjacent to our kind of world, right? So we have this thing going on, this interesting, it's kind of off-kilter look at things. So when you realize, you know, she's trying to go back in time to, you know, cure herself, right? Extend her life somehow. We kind of see what this film is. And it's, you know, obviously they're trying to find this cure, but also it does seem to be a reflection, you know? It's like we have Zoya looking at her life, looking at the choices, You know, what have I done with myself? And it also, because we get these flashbacks, right? Because the film starts off with, you know, a 12-year-old Zoya and her kind of dad narrating a little bit. You know, he reads her these stories as a little girl. So we see her finding these pills. We don't know what it is, though, at first. And then throughout the film, there are these kind of flashbacks to this time. There's flashbacks to her at college. You know, all of this kind of different thing. And then we also have flashbacks, a few flashbacks for Paula. And kind of some, in these flashbacks, sometimes we see an event that Zoya has spoken about previously. And so what is also interesting is, like, Zoya might say one thing, but the flashback is slightly different. Now, it's not hugely different, right? But there's a slight difference at times, which then kind of makes you go, oh, okay. Right, but you know how we always remember, like, we can remember things, right, and go, oh, this happened like this. And someone else might be like, I mean, it didn't happen like that. It was slightly different, right? And you might be very much in line for most of it, but then there's a slight deviance, you know? And we're kind of seeing that. So it's kind of like, what is Zoya actually remembering? You know what I mean? How much of that has she skewered to help her coalesce with some of the choices she made, right? For not maybe pursuing something that she may have wanted. You know, so we have all of this, which is intriguing. You know, that's really intriguing because it's the human condition, essentially. Now, with a film like this, you have several characters. Now, it's not ram-packed with like thousands of different people, but there are several people here, like Donald, her husband, you know, Jane, her daughter. And they don't really get a lot of playing time, you know, but then even the professor, not a lot of playing time. And there are some interesting things, right? These interesting components, because this is the connective tissue with Zoya. But, you know, some of it is just surface level. And it just feels like, I wish there was more here. You know what I mean? I think that's a big thing. Like, you wish there could have been more at times, right? And especially, you know, Paula is interesting. And Paula, as a foil to Zoya, helps you kind of, you know, move the story in a certain way. Ask certain questions, you know. But again, we still don't get a huge lot on Paula. You know, so the film, it's an interesting idea. And, you know, it's that kind of bare bones drama, that bare bones approach at telling this story, which works in a way, but also suffers from lack of exploration in certain avenues, I felt. You know, the performances, you know, from Mary Louise Parker and Ayo Adebori were very good, you know, especially the moments. Like, there's a bit when Paula is telling the story, and we really see the emotion on Edebori's face, and it's just like, oh man, right? She really did nail that. And Right, with Mary, you know, she also, you know, really gives us the emotional component of Zoya, right? And I think the end of the film, because it is that kind of realization of, right? So it's not a bad ending, you know? It's not a bad ending. And the... the kind of realization that has been come to is good. There's the part that feels a little rushed. I mean, that's all I can say, because, you know, anything else is kind of spoiling things, right? You know, there is this bit where you think, it's a little, it feels a little rushed, right? And it could have had a more impactful emotional, like, hit if they could have found a different entry to it, you know? But it's interesting, you know what I mean? It's like, oh man, I think, like, there was this film, it's from a few years back, right? Safety Not Guaranteed, I believe it was called. And that was very... it was this sci-fi film. But it was this very... like, lo-fi one. That you kind of wondered, is this sci-fi? Is it sci-fi? And then, like, at the very end, you get hit with this thing. You're like, oh, shit, okay, right? And it's very interesting. I really enjoyed that film. And Omni Loop does remind me of that, you know, in the fact of, right, it's taking this interesting look and it's kind of giving you this world that you kind of wonder, is it? This thing? I'm not quite sure, right? There's also, gosh, what was this film called? It was Encounter, right? With Riz Ahmed starring. And that, again, it was this really interesting story around kind of mental health. And you wondered, like, is it a sci-fi film? Right? And it's really walking that line. And then you realize, you know, what it is, right? And that was really interesting. And I think, as I say, Omni reminded me of Safety Not Guaranteed and Encounter. Now, I think those two were stronger films. But if you liked those films, then I think you'll find this intriguing, you know? I believe so, right? As I said, it's interesting. It's not perfect. And I think if they could have just addressed certain things, like, you're getting a bigger emotional impact. But, you know, it is interesting. There are some really good components of it. There's this bit of music that is played throughout, right, as a bed, which it's a really nice piece of music. There were times though where you're just like, we don't necessarily need it for this moment, or we didn't need it as long within that moment, but the music itself is really nice. So yeah, there's these components of the film that are very good, you know, but as a whole, it doesn't necessarily all perfectly come together. But yes, if you enjoyed Encounter, if you enjoyed Safety Not Guaranteed, I think the Omni Loop will be of interest. It is out now on all your favorite VODs. Omni Loop. Well, Netflix have a new installment of their R.L. Stine franchise. This is Fear Street Prom Queen. Fear Street Prom Queen.
Yes, 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 people. Fear Street Prom. Fear Street Prom Queen. Yes, this is the latest installment in the franchise. It is directed by Matt Palmer, who co-wrote the film with Donald McCleary. The film is produced by Peter Sherman, Gino Topping. Who else do we have? And Corey Adelson. It is executive produced by Yvonne M. Bernard, Lee Janik, Jane Stine, Joan Warica, and Mary Ann Waterhouse. It is co-produced by Caroline Pitofsky and Dan Bernard. Okay, so the Newton brothers took care of the music. Mark Gorey is on cinematography. Christopher Donaldson edits the piece. Right, Cameron Kuba was behind all the casting. Production design, we have Nick Bassett. Michelle Brady is art direction. Set decoration is Brittany Morrison, with Natalie Bronfman on costume design. Hair and makeup, we have Alexandro Bastinoni, Kelly Brennan, Angela Campanile, Tamara Cirillo, Dee Cummings, Kayla DuBelize, Jenny Duckworth, Janelle Green, Paulina Harkus, Susan Hayward, Jacqueline Hinks, Rosemary Holosko, Sean Hunter, Elaine Lee, Portia Lynn, Angela Mancini, Diane Mazur, Mandy McGrath, Kirsten Morris, Danny Morrow, Steve Newborn, Christopher Pizzarelli, Cheryl Rose, Sandy Slavosky, Josie Stewart, Erin Sweeney, Rosanna Verdamini, Nancy Warren, Sandra Whittle, Kelly Wetter, Cheryl Wilson, and Teresa Young. Boy, that's a lot of people, right? So our cast. Let's get to that. So India Flower is Laurie Granger. Her best friend is played by Susanna Son. That's Megan Rogers. Oh, actually, who plays her mum? Okay, so her mum, Rose, Laurie's mum, is played by Joanna Boland. Alright, so we have then got Tiffany Falconer, played by Finna Straza. Her dad, Dan, is played by Chris Klein. Her mum, Nancy, is played by Catherine Waterstone. We got Tiffany's boyfriend, Tyler, played by David Ikono. And then the members of Tiffany's clique, the Wolf Pack, right? There's Melissa McKendrick, played by Ella Rubin. We've got Debbie Winters, played by Rebecca Ablack, and Linda Harper, played by Ilan O'Driscoll. Linda's boyfriend, Bobby, is played by Dakota Taylor. Debbie's boyfriend, Judd, is played by Damian Romero. There's Claire, right, played by Eden Sommer-Gilmore. Gerald, played by Brennan Clost. We've got Principal Wayland, played by Darren Baker. VP, Vice Principal Dolores Breckeridge, played by Lily Taylor. Who else do we have? Dum dum dum. Harmony LaFay, played by Cecilia Lee. Spider, played by Joseph Chai. Chad, played by Ryan Rosary. Freddy, played by Tom Keats. Forgot there's Christy Renault, played by Arena Greenblatt. She's also running for prom queen. Her boyfriend Jimmy, played by Dale Wilby. That's our main cast. The gist of the film is this: welcome back to Shadyside. In this next installment of the blood-soaked Fear Street franchise, prom season at Shadyside High is underway, and the school's wolf pack of It Girls is busy with its usual sweet and vicious campaigns for the crown. But when a gutsy outsider is unexpectedly nominated to the court, and the other girls start mysteriously disappearing, the class of 88 is suddenly in for one hell of a prom night. Da-da-da-dum. So, after the first lot of Fear Street films, man, I was looking forward to seeing what was next, right? I enjoyed those. Now, it was all the way back in 2021 that they came out. And Netflix did that interesting thing of releasing them, I think, like, over the course of 10 days or something like that, right? And, they were good. I enjoyed them, right? This one, so there's a lot, you know, they're based on the R.L. Stein book series. And I suppose there's a load of books in this whole Fear Street franchise. So after that initial success, you know, there's ample ground for new shit. And I mean, so Fear Street Prom Queen is a standalone. I think they're working on another trilogy as well. But yeah, so Prom Queen, right? Which I believe is based on the book The Prom Queen, right? Now, it's, you know, it all starts off and we're kind of establishing this clique at school, and the fact that, you know, you have the wolf pack, right? And then you have Laurie and her friend Megan, who are, you know, on the outs, but Laurie fancies Tiffany's boyfriend. So there's all of this kind of stuff going on. And we soon jump into the whole prom, which is fine. I mean, there is a murder before anything gets underway, which, I mean, it lets you have a glance at the killer, right, in their get-up and all of that jazz. And then we're into the prom. And, you know, there's plenty of deaths and all of this kind of jazz, which, you know, fine, that's what it is, right? But I kind of think there's a lot of questions here. You know what I mean? Like, with the first death, you have to go, how would the killer even know that the person is going to be where they are? You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of odd. And then as the film goes, like, they throw out this kind of, is it this person? Right? There's a load of kind of camera shots and different things, like, letting you think it might be a certain person. Now, the problem with that is it's rather obvious, right? It's an obvious choice. So you know that's not the one, right? You know that it's not going to come to fruition in that effect. And I think when you get to the end of the film and the killer is revealed, you're like, okay, fine. But it then doesn't necessarily make sense throughout the film. You know what I mean? Because I think you have to look at, like, height and, you know, shape and all of that. But also, it's kind of like certain conversations don't really make any sense. Right? The reasons for what goes down doesn't necessarily make any sense. You know? So it's just like, ah, you have this film, you have all of these deaths and, you know, these supposed reasons, which is fine, but it doesn't all, like, mash together. You know, there's so many holes, right? It could be a sieve, which is a shame, because, like, acting wise and everything, it's all fine, but it's just, I think the script is the weak link here, right? Like, you have a bit when Megan and Laurie fall out, and it just kind of feels more manufactured than natural, you know? And also, like, Megan does some stuff, and it's just like, that's all well and good, but are you telling me you didn't think how it might impact your friend? You know what I mean? So you have all of these big, like, people acting in a certain way, and it's just like, oh, I did. And you're just like, I mean, you don't even have to be the sharpest nail in the box, right, to figure out this shit. So how are you acting like I didn't know? You know what I mean? It doesn't really work. You have people with hidings. The hiding places people choose is, like, there's a bit when people, you know, we have people hide behind, well, underneath this see-through tarp, and it's like, I mean, it's not fully see-through, right? But it's that kind of thing where you could see, like, the colour change of something behind it. You know what I mean? So it's just like, I mean, that makes no sense, right? Hiding in a wardrobe with one of those slotted doors, again, doesn't make any sort of sense. So it's just very bizarre, you know? Like, there's something with a knife, and where this knife is stored, and you just think, okay, that is, yeah, you're gonna cut yourself. Like, there's no way you're not cutting yourself if that's where knife is. You know, it's a little bizarre. Which is a, yes, it's just a shame because, as I said, I really liked the first three films and I was hoping this would continue. But it just, and it's like, it, you know, it's not like the first three films were, you know, on the best ever list or anything, but they were fun. You know, they were fun. They, yeah, there was logic between them in a way. You know, it made, they made more sense, right? And as I say, this one, it just, it doesn't. The minute you go, oh, that's the killer, you're like, hold on. Hold on. Because, yeah, the reason for deaths, the conversations that are had, it muddies all the waters, right? It muddies all the waters, and you're just kind of scratching your head. There's also that bit where, when people die, you have people standing there going, ooh, can I have a look? And you're just like, no, you would be running away. Right? You're not standing looking, you are running. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Fear Street Prom Queen is rather frustrating. It's rather frustrating, which is a shame. Do not expect anything on the level of those first three films, right? You have to kind of look at, I think there was something, it was a foreign, I think it was a Spanish horror film, maybe it was a German, I forget now, it was something like the book club or something, we looked at it last year, you know, that, like, this is more along those lines, you know, it's one of those ones. It's like Prime Video we looked at last year. It was gosh, what is it, something killer, and the girl goes back in time to save her mum, I think, or something like that. This is along those lines, right? So if you like those films, I think you'll like Fear Street Prom Queen. But, you know, yeah, don't be expecting anything like the first three.
So now we got the first of our cinema joints, the new one from Wes Anderson. This is the Phonicon Scheme. I think I pronounced that right. Okay, people, so I am just back from the cinema. I went to see, I didn't go to see God. I was just thinking about the pronunciation of this. The Phonicanian scheme? I have no clue. It is the new Wes Anderson film, essentially, right? He wrote and directed it. It is produced by Stephen Rowles, John Peets, Jeremy Dawson, and Wes Anderson. It is executive produced by Roman Coppola, Henning Mollefenter. It is co-produced by Molly Rosenblatt, associate produced by Ben Adler, with line production from Marius Ihalil, Alexandra Desplat took care of the music. Bruno Del Bonel is on cinematography, with Barney Pilling editing the piece. Casting is handled by Douglas Ebel. Adam Stockhausen is production design. Art direction is Mark Blitz. Nene Lucia. Anja Mula. Esther Skrina. And Mariana Vasconcelos. Anna Pinnock is set decoration. Costume design is Milena Canonero. Hair, makeup, all of that jazz. We have Andrea Voss, Etty Stanley, Kate Alexandra Smith, Valeska Skifhanhalm, Ina Souza, Helen Rowe, Susie Redfern, Stephen Murphy, even Heike Merker, Marie Maggio, Georgia Fernley, Mark Kula, and Islin Broche. The cast, I mean, there is so many people up in this, right? We have got Benicio del Toro. Right, he stars in the film as Zarkorda. His daughter, Sister Leslie, is played by Mia Freppleton. Freppleton. Bjorn Lund is played by Michael Cera. Riz Ahmed is Prince Farouk. Leland is played by Tom Hanks. Bryan Cranston is Regan. Matea Amalric is Marcelli Bob. Sergio is Richard Adieo. Jeffrey Wright is Marty. Cousin Hilda is Scarlett Johansson. Uncle Nubar is Benedict Cumberbatch. Rupert Friend is Excalibur. Hope Davis is Mother Superior. God, played by Bill Murray. Charlotte Gainsbourg is First Wife. William Dafoe is Knave. F. Murray Abraham is The Prophet. Broadcloth is Alex Jennings. Notary is Jason Watkins. The Pilot at the beginning is Stephen Park. Assassin 1 is Tonio Arango. Chairman is Donald Sumter. Hermit is Carl Markovics. Field Reporter is Scott Shepherd. Asher Joy Samuels is Radical Freedom Militia Corps. Also part of the corps is Stephanie Back. Mohammed Belhajin. Nicholas Avin. Second wife is Antonia Desplat. I mean, that's probably, you know, our key players, let's say. I mean, there's a lot of people up in it, man. There's a lot of people. The gist, though, of the film is wealthy businessman Zarkorda appoints his only daughter, a nun, as sole heir to his estate. As Korda embarks on a new enterprise, they soon become the target of scheming tycoons, foreign terrorists, and determined assassins. So that is the film. This is this. Well, the story was devised by Wes Anderson and Roman Coppola. Roman Coppola, right? I mean, Wes Anderson is a unique filmmaker. You know what I mean? Like, just, I think, glancing at a film, you can tell it's a Wes Anderson joint, right? He uses a certain color palette that is so distinctive. I mean, when the after party in its second season, right, they kind of changed things up to director styles as the foundation for their episodes. And they did one in the vein of Wes Anderson, right? Because his stuff is that distinctive. So, and he's done so many different things. So it's always interesting to see when he has a new joint. I remember seeing about this and just what, because, you know, obviously I cannot pronounce the name of it, right? So I was just curious, like, what is this film going to be, you know? Like, with the, I couldn't really get into Asteroid City. That one, it looks very good. It's very interesting, but I just, for whatever reason, couldn't vibe with it. And I think that feels to be the same with this. I just can't really get into the Phonicon scheme. It's filmed very, you know what I mean? It looks good. It's got that typical quirk that we find and, you know, oftentimes find so endearing from Anderson. All of those Wes Anderson traits are in this, you know? But, yeah, for whatever reason, I just, you know, I think The French Dispatch wasn't bad. I think the last one I really, really loved was probably the Grand Budapest Hotel. You know, I did think that the Netflix ones, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, I found that charming. I enjoyed those. But actual big scale films, it was probably The Grand Hotel. But yeah, as I said, The French Dispatch, it was okay. It was okay. But I think that seemed to be the moment I was like kind of drifting away from the quirk. Right? Now with this one, we open up, right? We have got Calder on a plane. On a plane with Stephen Park. And he turns around to look at his assistant and the back of the plane blows up, right? And yeah, it you know, we learn someone's trying to assassinate him. That's at the very start of the film. So people trying to kill him. But he's kind of reckless, right? The pilot is vexed because he didn't do any checks or, you know, anything like that. So, that, you know, straight away, you kind of get the, you know, an understanding of who Calder is, right? And a little bit of what's happening. People trying to kill him, you know, take his money, stop him from putting in place a scheme that he's working on. So we have this. It's all fictional countries and everything like that. He's got a daughter in a nunnery. So, you know, she steps out and he makes her his heir. And it's them traveling him around, right? So we're going all over the place. These new kind of worlds that Anderson has devised, right? These different scapes of interest. And, you know, it's all a load of quirky interactions, right, which have their own charm, but it's like there's nothing that you can go, oh, that was terrible, that was, it's just I didn't find myself caring. You know what I mean? Like, there wasn't a character. And there's these little twists and turns, these red herrings, these, you know, whoa, did I see that coming? You know, there's that all embedded in this. But I just didn't find myself caring about any of the characters. I guess it's one of those things sometimes that people kind of come off a little similar, right? It's Mia Frippleton, however you say her name. I found her character kind of similar to Scarlett Johansson's in a way, right? They're not mirrors of each other, but there's like these aspects that is very similar. So if you can't really separate, it's just like, you know. What I did kind of enjoy were these kind of, how do you say it? These off-tangent moments, right, with God. That was these kind of little surrealisms. And they were interesting, you know. I kind of enjoyed those aspects of the film. But yeah, it just seemed a bit odd for odd's sake, you know. Which is, you know, you don't want to downplay what was created, what was put out into the world. And I am sure, you know, as I said, I couldn't really resonate with the last few films. But I imagine if you did, right, if Asteroid City, you know what I mean, just set your world on fire. Right, if you really love that one, I think you will like this. Right, if you were less ambivalent to the French Dispatch than myself, I think the Phoenician Scheme will be your joint, you know. So it doesn't resonate with me. But I'm sure it will with a whole gang of people. Because as I said, it is essentially Wes Anderson. There's no deviations here. It's quirky, it's weird, it's got the colour palette, you know, our ensemble cast, right? A lot of familiar faces that Anderson loves to work with, they're all here. So all of the pieces for a good Wes Anderson film are present. It just didn't connect with me. But people, it is out in the cinema. So if you want to bring some The Phoenician Scheme into your life, go at it. Have fun. Enjoy it. Also, let me know what resonated for you, what worked for you, what didn't work for you. You know, be interesting to hear that, people. Okay, enjoy the film. Well, people, we're not kung fu fighting, because this is Karate Kid Legends. Okay, so I went to see Karate Kid Legends today. Man, this film, it is directed by Jonathan Entwistle, written by Rob Leiber. The film is produced by Karen Rosenfeld. It is executive produced by Jenny Hinkey, Ralph Macchino, and line production from Joseph McCukey. Dominic Lewis handled the music, with Justin Brown on cinematography. It's edited by Colby Parker Jr. and Dana E. Gloomberman. I think that's right. Jonathan Papsidera handled the casting. So, John. Well, Jonathan. You know, it's the same thing, essentially. John Papsidera. John Billington and Maya Siegel are production design. Art direction, we have Felix Lavia Charon, Marie Soli Demon, Elise Deblu, and Frederick Berthemu Gabino. They all were down with the art direction. Set decoration, we have got Charles Oliver Tremblay, Charlotte Lee, Pascal Deschenins, Louise Dandonou, Jean-Charles Clevu, and Genevieve Bovine. Mirren Gordon Cruzier is costume design. We got Hannah Yee, Natalie Vergia, Natalie Trepanier, Sardine Takam, Mario Saint-Louise, Sebastian R.G. Romero, Cynthia Patton, Lindsay McAllister, Colette Martel, Catherine Lavoux, Christopher Garit, Bruno Gattin, Nancy Filat, Yannick Farbage, Frederick Dugui, Natalie Dion, Brittany Crooks, Annick Charretier, Christine Carrier, Julie Brasbois, Marianne Bobette, Christian Belek were all on hair and makeup. And our cast. We have got Jackie Chan as Mr. Han, Ralph Macchio as Daniel LaRusso, Ben Wong is Li Feng, Ming Nei Wen is Li's mum, Dr. Fong, and the niece of Mr. Han. We have then got, Sadie Stanley is Mia Lipani. Her dad, who is Victor Lipani, is played by Joshua Jackson. There is Mia's ex-boyfriend, Connor Day, played by Aramis Knight. Wyatt Olief is Alan, Lee's tutor. The headmistress at Lee's new school, Mrs. Morgan, is played by Seanette Renee Wilson. Who else do we have? Yeah, because there's O'Shea. O'Shea is played by Tim Rosen. He owns Demolition Dojo. There's Fat Jerry, played by Nicholas Carella. He works with Victor. Who else do we have? Bo Fong, Lee's brother, played by Yankee G. A young version of Lee is played by Marco Zhang. Ortiz is played by Marcus Aurelio. I do believe he's an MMA fighter. Then we have got. Oh, and he's the Ortiz is the boxer who Victor fights. His corner man is played by Nico Nikolov. Chance Jones is the hype man. Buddha Stevens, played by Mustafa Bulut. The subway worker who we see at the end towards the end is played by Canencia Jordan. Yeah, I think that's basically it, really. Yeah, so the gist of the film. When Kung Fu prodigy Li Feng relocates to New York City with his mother to attend a prestigious new school, he finds solace in a new friendship with a classmate and her father. But his newfound peace is short-lived after he attracts unwanted attention from a formidable local karate champion. Driven by a desire to defend himself, Lee embarks on a journey to enter the ultimate karate competition. Guided by the wisdom of his kung fu teacher, Mr. Han, and the legendary karate kid, Daniel LaRusso, Lee merges their unique styles to prepare for an epic martial arts showdown. Okay, well, that, people, is, yeah, bullshit. That's not the film. It's not the film at all. That's kind of crazy. You know? Yeah, that is just very odd. You know? Oh, shit. I just saw something on IMDb, right? It says Ralph Macchio, when he made this film, was 63, which is 12 years older than Pat Moriarty, who played Mr. Miyagi in the original film, which is nutty because Mr. Miyagi, like, you thought he was a mad old dude, right? So Mr. Miyagi was 51 in that film, but you thought Mr. Miyagi must be like 70 or something. You know what I mean? Which, yeah, is nutty. But people, they, when you look at people in the 80s compared to people now, man, like, a 30-year-old looked, you know what I mean, mad old, right? So it's, yeah, it sounds crazy, but, you know, I guess it's understandable in a way. So there was a lot of talk about this film, which, it's kind of odd, right? It was all kind of odd because it didn't really, you know, because you had Cobra Kai, you know what I mean? Like the series, it started off on YouTube, right? It was one of YouTube's original programs before they decided to shutter all of that and Netflix picked it up. But it was that, you know, that was spinning off and it came after the 2010 The Karate Kid reboot, which was terrible. Oh my God, it had Will Smith's kid in it. It was so shit. Oh my God, I hated it. It just made no sense, right? It made no sense whatsoever. And the crazy thing about it is that this film kind of, you know, like, because in the 2010 film, right, you had Jaden's character move from Detroit to Beijing, China, and he's doing karate, but Mr. Han, right, Jackie Chan's character in this one, he's got this big kung fu dojo, right? Which was the thing that made no sense. Like, if you're going to China, that's not karate, right? That's kung fu. So it was just, yeah, it just never really made any sort of sense. It was very weird. It was very weird indeed. But this film, it's actually, I believe, I might be wrong, but I believe it is Jonathan Entwistle's feature directorial debut. Now, look, he's directed a lot of TV, but I think this is the first film he's done, you know? Now, I might be wrong, but I believe it is. But yeah, this film, it started off, and I think it was a scene from the second Karate Kid film, right? When they go back to Japan. I think it was from that, right? So we have that scene, but then it gets expanded upon with animation, right? And it was just basically talking how you had like this Chinese-Japanese connection, you know? So that was it. And then we go to China, and we've got Mr. Han and Ben Wong, Li Fong even. and we have all of this, and then we find out that they're moving. Now, when this opened up, I was like, oh my days, because it's subtitled. So I have no real clue what the fuck was happening there. Now, they were using yellow text. But there's no solid background, so you're losing it in the light, you know what I mean, scenes, and yeah, it was a mess, man, it was a mess. But we have all of this, and then they arrive in New York, right, and he's going to his new school, and we have all of this kind of thing. Now, the weird thing about the beginning was, so they're at this new joint, and, you know, there's no food to, you know, Lee's like, I'll go out and I'll get something. I'll get pizza. I saw a pizza place as we were coming here. So go to the pizza place. Firstly, he's just like, he's asking for a stuffed crust. And they're like, oh, what the fuck are you talking about? Oh, we don't do stuffed crust. But then he's just like, they're like, you know, the girl Mia, who works there, obviously, right? She's just like, oh, is there anything else you need? Right? Because her dad's dad and the other workers, Fat Cherry and the others, are mocking him for the stuffed crust thing, right? So she's just like, ah, stop being mean. And she's like, what else do you need? He's just like, toilet paper. Right? And then he's just like, oh no, what I meant was a place where I could buy toilet paper. But I'm just like, that's, you know what I mean? Like, you would ask for a store close by where I can buy amenities? That's what you would ask. You know what I mean? So it was, you have these weird structured sentences and conversations that are there to, like, you know what I mean? Try and get a laugh or something. But it's just like, it makes no sense. And then she's just like, oh, there's a bodega. And he's just like, a bodega? And what makes no sense whatsoever, right? This film is set in present day. So there's the internet. And if you try and tell me that someone isn't going to look into where they're moving to, you know what I mean? You're full of shit. And the other thing, just watching TV and films, you know what a bodega is, right? So basically, we're saying Lee has never watched a Western film or TV show. That's what we're saying, right? If you're trying to believe he has no clue what Bodoja is, right? It's just, these things are just dumb. I think it's kind of lazy storytelling, you know? But, you know, he then bumps into her at his school and they, you know, become friends. But another thing is, we're saying, because we essentially don't see any of Mia's other friends. So it's just like, Mia has no friends. That's, like, huh? How? Why? Why does this girl have no other friends? You know? Why does she have no other friends? Right? And what are they actually bonding on? You know what I mean? Like, we don't get any legitimate reason why these two might fall for each other. It's not saying they couldn't or wouldn't, but, you know, it doesn't give us a good reason. Right? It doesn't create a situation where you're like, oh yeah, I buy this relationship. You know, just the notion of, you know, because, so her dad is an ex-boxer, and, you know, there's a bit when he asks Lee to train him. Again, makes absolutely no sense. Makes no sense whatsoever, right? Like, you're meant to believe that Lee is this kung fu protege. But he's getting his ass kicked at the beginning of the film. Right? So it's either he is really good, or are we saying kung fu is bullshit? Right? Like, that's the thing. It's very odd. Like, this whole setup is very odd. We kind of take a long time before we get to the inevitable karate competition. And they never really... Like, it's the first Karate Kid, mad successful. I loved it as a kid, you feel me? And they don't ever try and veer too far away from that whole concept and setup, right? You've got this bad dojo. So in this one, it's Demolition Dojo. And of course, Mia's ex-boyfriend is a fighter there. And the foot, like, whenever we have bits from there, because we're meant to believe that this Connor kid is this vicious fighter. Ah, it's insane. He's so... crazy. We have him knocking out his sparring partners. He's knocking out his sparring partners. And again, this film is set in present times, right? You wouldn't have people training at that school. You wouldn't have people training at that school if you're, you know what I mean, there's the fear of being knocked out in sparring. Now, obviously, there's going to be there's the people that love hard sparring. But that's a small percentage. Most people who are just looking to, I don't know, keep fit, right? Do it, for, you know, in their spare time. They're not looking to hard spar, right? Like, I did judo, jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai. And whenever there was a dick that would come, you know what I mean? Sign up. Hey, people just wanted to steer clear of that person. And it made some people just not want to come back, right? So you've got this Connor kid blasting his training partners. But this is a rammed up school. You need to sell this shit better. There's other ways to build a villain, right? To build someone who's just a shit. There's other ways to do it. But this film, right, it's going, oh, in the first Karate Kid, we had Cobra Kai, right? So let's, you know, do a modern take on that, right? So we got that. The fight sequences in this film, I mean, especially there's this big fight outside towards the beginning. It is so fast, right? It feels like they sped up the action and you have these really fast cuts that does make it a really unenjoyable sequence. I did not enjoy that. See, it was just really just the way it was put together, the cutting of that fight, it was bad. I did not like it at all, you know? And a lot of times the fight scenes are the things that can save a film, right? You the fights were fun, you know? As long as it's like not done in a way where you can see that they're obviously not hitting each other, right? But yeah, this one, some odd fights, odd fighting. I mean, even in the film, we have a bit at the start where, you know, that we see this move done. So you know, okay, so this move is featuring in the film. But instead of saving the anticipation of till the end, they show a thing, you know, before, and you're just like, I mean, to know this thing at this point, then you really know how the film is basically ending. I mean, you know, I mean, it's not a surprise how this film is going to end, but I'm just like, keep a little bit back, right? Try and pretend that people can't see through your paper thin plot, you know what I mean? Just try, people, try, right? But the film is just full of these weird, like, there's a bit when Lee gets into Victor's pizzeria late at night. And it's just like, why would Lee have the key? Right? Why would Lee have the key to the fucking pizzeria? That was just very weird. The same with how Mr. Fang turns up in New York. Like, even because Daniel doesn't come into the film until, I think, over halfway. Like, maybe two-thirds in, let's say. And that feels very forced. Right? This isn't a smooth film. It's very odd, but again, like, it feels like this whole production, you know, I think I lost my tangent at the beginning, right? Because when this was originally announced, it was like this was going to be separate to Cobra Kai. That's what we had heard. It's separate to Cobra Kai. But then, you know, you then find out now, right? They're saying that the film is set after Cobra Kai, right? So it's like going, Cobra Kai did happen and all of this stuff does, you know, so you have all of these things, but the film itself just feels like you're trying to squish all of these parts together and it's not merging. It's not really merging, you know? So, I think if you like Cobra Kai, you could possibly like Karate Kid Legend. Because You know, I watched some of Cobra Kai, and it was very, like, on the nose. You know? It was very on the nose. It was very predictable and everything like that. So I think if you like that, you could like this. If you like the 2010 film, The Karate Kid, you could like this. I mean, if you like the next Karate Kid... Oh man, and that was just terrible shit. You might like this, right? I think this is kind of for those people that enjoyed Never Back Down, right? Like those dreadful MMA kind of films that people try to make once they realize how big the UFC is. You know, there was one terrible one on Prime that came out, I think, beginning of last year. Right, so if those are your jam, you like those films, then I think Karate Kid Legend could speak to you. But if you're wanting something that harkens back to the 84 The Karate Kid, right, that has that sentimental, you know what I mean, value, that has that feel-good nature, I don't think Karate Kid Legends does. Because you have so much contriveness here. You have so many forced situations that it just doesn't really add up to a great experience. For me, anyway. You might enjoy it, people. Right? You might enjoy it. And there's been plenty of times where I've not vibed with something and everyone else has. So this might be for you, but it wasn't for me. Right? Now, Karate Kid Legend, it is currently out in the cinema. I mean, it dropped today, right? It's currently out in the cinema. So if you want to see it, hop down to your local Cinemaplex and enjoy. Okay, people. So it took 23 years, but Disney have dropped a live action version of their classic. People, this is Lilo and Stitch. Okay, people, so, I went to go see Lilo and Stitch, right, the live-action version of the animated Disney Classico. It is directed by Dean Fleischer Kamp, written by Chris Kekanulani Bright and Mike Van Waas. It is produced by, let's have a look, Dan Lin and Jonathan Erich. It is executive produced by Ryan Alperin, Tom C. Petzman, Louis Provost, and Thomas Schumacher. It is co-produced by Laurie Kongolbell, an associate produced by Kurt Humphreys. So Dan Romer took care of the music. It's Nigel Bluck on cinematography. Adam Gerstel and Philip J. Bartel handle editing duties, with Rachel Whitley on casting. Right, production design, we have Todd Chernowski. Art direction is Ann Costa, Angram Lee, and Julien Pugner. Catherine Hong and Vanessa Fonari. A set decoration. Costume design is Wendy Chook. hair and makeup. We have got Sheldon Yamuchi, Kekapani Vasquez Tamali, Kakala Tamana, Maria Sandoval, Catherine Sanchez, Karen Ibushi Prezier, Ralph Malani, Cliff Malani, Dennis Linard, Melody Levy, Amber Mafala Lee, Mia Covero, Drew Allen Johnson, Julia Gadina Martin, Mahalani Diego, Chantel Bumla, and Nina Bellord. So yes, that was that. We've got Niviv Bartels on VFX and our cast. Okay, let's get to our splendid cast. Well, we have got Lilo, played by Mia Kelahoa. Her older sister and guardian, Nanny, is played by Sydney Agudon. Their friend and neighbor, Tutu, is played by Amy Hill. David, who's also the neighbor, is played by Kaipu Dudit. You've got the social worker, that's her name, Mrs. Kekua, played by Tia Carrera. Stitch is once again voiced by Chris Saunders. Right, we've got what is his name? Dr. Jumba Jokiba, voiced by Zach Galifianakis. And Zach also plays the human version of Jumba. Billy Magnuson voices Agent Wendell Pleakey, right? And also portrays the human version of Pleakey. Courtney B. Vance is Cobra Bubbles, the CIA agent. We've got the Grand Council Woman, who is voiced by Hannah Waddington. There is Myrtle Edmonds, who is played by Emery Hukani Brill. There's Jason Scott Lee as the manager for La Luau, right where Nanny and David work. Who else is there? AJ is played by Celia Kenny. Blake Labenz is Kumuhula. Agent Foster, played by Skylar Babel. Agent Hoyan is played by Judy Nation. Agent Zao, played by Christian Yang. The concierge lady is played by Courtney Coleman. Dr. Paer is played by Christina Soares. That's the main lot of people, I would say, right? So the gist of the film, a lonely Hawaiian girl befriends a runaway alien, helping to mend her fragmented family. Now, this is based on the 2002 animated Disney classic. right? So that's, man, a long time, right? A long time. 23 years. Whew. Now, there have been, I think there's like two sequels and a TV series based on, you know, the original animated film. And I believe this takes aspects from the sequels and the TV show as well. So it's not just the original film, right? I haven't seen any of it. I just know it was mad popular, right? No, it was mad popular. But it's one of those things, you know what I mean? Like, you get to a certain point and you're just kind of like, I don't know about going to the cinema and watching a film that is basically aimed at kids, you know? Just because I know I'm most likely not going to enjoy it, right? But you give these things a go sometimes, and this was one of those times. So Dean Fleischer Kamp, he directed Marcel the Shell with the Shoes On, which was, you know, a big one. I think it won an Oscar, you know. So he's from that fame, right? It is Chris Kalananani Bright's, I think, first feature writing gig. And just a second feature from Mike Van Waz. So they, you know, it's their job to bring this to life. And, you know, like, as I said, I haven't watched the animated version. So I'm literally coming in kind of fresh to this. And it kind of played well. You know what I mean? Like, I thought the animation on Stitch, oh, that was all done very well. You know, obviously, you're not mistaking Stitch for a dog, you know. But it looked all right. It didn't look clunky or too out of place, anything like that. Dr. Jumba and Angel Paliki, they're fine. They didn't look too bad either. There is more of a CGI feel to them, right? But it's that kind of weird alien look kind of thing. You know, I think the star of this really was Lilo, right? Mia Kalua. She was really good, you know, as just playing this little girl, you know, rambunctious, but who loved her sister, you know, was lonely, felt like an outcast, and just wanted someone to love, you know, in this situation where she's lost her parents, you know, and she's feeling adrift. And I thought she did a really good job. Also, Sydney Agdon as Nanny was really good. I think you buy that sisterly relationship, you know, and I think that's very important to the film, you know, being able to buy those things. So I thought that all was definitely a high point of this, right? Those situations, that relationship. In the film itself, I mean, as a story, it's nothing crazy. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you've got this alien in this ship. Kind of, like, Stitch crashes the ship. Which is kind of crazy to think, right? You can put this alien is smart enough to get in the ship, but not smart enough not to know if I smash up everything, the ship's going to crash. Right? That is a bit weird. You know what I mean? It's a bit weird. There's probably other ways you could have it crashing on Earth, but it is what it is, you know. Yeah, like, I guess when you have Stitch on Earth and, like, you know, he terrorizes a wedding and then he's just all over the place kind of thing, you just kind of wonder how it could really be on the low, right, without everyone knowing, because people have taken videos and pictures at the wedding. So it's just like, how is this not more of a thing? I mean, even though they've sent the CIA there, like, you still think it should be a bigger thing than what it is. You know what I mean? As even when Stitch is pretending to be a dog, Stitch don't look like a dog, right? So it's just like, you'd think there'd be more hubbub, right? You'd think there'd be more, but there's not. But, yeah, so you have that element of it. And then I guess it's just, I mean, there are bits where you just think, I mean, Lilo's a little kid, obvs, right? But you do think that she must know the situation they're in, right? With social services coming around and, you know, you know, she could be taken away if she doesn't stop messing around. So there's certain bits that you just think are a bit like, it's what we always see. You know what I mean? Like, you always see these scenarios. So, you know, there's this bit when the kid is, and they're acting crazy, and it's just like, social services is going to take us, and then, you know, it all gets sorted out. So the story is kind of stereotypical. It does play to the beats that we always see. Yeah, but I think there were some sweet moments, you know, especially at the end, right? And they're the familial elements. They're the elements about family, about, you know, building these connections. I think those resonate. Those are the strong points of the film. You know what I mean? And I think that's fine, right? Because obviously this film is for little kids, essentially, you know, and not to say adults aren't going to enjoy it, because if you like all the Disney stuff, then possibly you will enjoy it, right? But it's the main thing is this is for kids. So if you can have a story and it's got these principles in it, that's not a bad thing, right? So a little kid will go away and go, yeah, family's important, right? And it's kind of like, I can make a family, right? It's the people I hold close, the people I love, you know what I mean? Even if it's not the conventional, typical family that, you know, you might read about, right? A family's family, you know? So I think that's good. That's a good thing. That's a positive thing. So I think the film, right, though it's not breaking any ground, you know, it's not standing on its own in areas of wonderment and, you know, creativity. It looks good, right? It has some very nice moments to it. I think it will play to a younger audience, although there was a family next to me, and this mum had, like, I feel one kid who's probably, I don't know, like, between 8 and 10, and then another kid that's probably like 3 or something. The little kid did not want to sit down. Questions all the way through. You know what I mean? Like, I think it is for a younger audience, you know, and I think it will play okay for them. So, And as I haven't seen the animated one, I don't know how it holds up compared to that. Right. I mean, I did hear a couple leaving when I left, and they were like, it's good. I prefer the animated version. And I will say there doesn't feel like there's that overall magic to it, right? It's there's it, as I say, it has those nice moments, right? But you don't have that glow all the way through, you know, so it hasn't got that, but it's steady, it's decent, it's not offensive, it will, you know, it will hold you down for an hour and 40 minutes, right? So yeah, Lilo and Stitch, it's in the cinema right now. Yo, so that is it for another week, another episode. Man, like, boom. Have you seen any of the films that we covered? Are you planning on seeing any of the films we have covered? Do you agree? Or do you think I missed something? Let me know, people. You can comment on Instagram, X, hit me up on YouTube. You know what I mean? Or send an email, whatever you want. But that is it. Now, next week we'll have our regular episode and we will be dropping, I don't know if we're dropping a part two or if we're dropping a special, but there will be extra Echo Chamber goodness next week. So keep your ears out or subscribe so you don't miss anything. Until then, people, enjoy your film watching. Peace.